Turn with me, if you will, to Judges chapter 8. Judges chapter 8 and verse number 10 is where we're going to start. We actually read this verse in our last lesson together, but we want to pick up with it again because we did not have time in the lesson. Our time ran out to where we did not have time to explain it, but I want to explain it today. If you remember what has happened, Gideon is on the east bank of the Jordan, on the east side of the Jordan River. He has gone over to Succoth and asked for food for his men, but they won't give it to him because they're afraid that if he is not successful against the Midianites, that they will come and retaliate against the men of Succoth. He goes to Peniel, and in Peniel the men will do the same thing. In Succoth, he warns the men if they don't give him food, he's going to come back and he's going to cut their flesh with the briars and the thorns of the wilderness. And over in Peniel, he has warned them that if they do not give his men food, then he's going to come back and burn down that lookout tower that they have in the town. And so they go on their way. And the reason why that Succoth and Peniel will not give them food is because they don't have Zeba and Zalmunna in their hands and in their control. And so Zeba and Zalmunna are the kings of the Midianites. Well, in verse number 10, as we pick up, we pick up with the story of Gideon catching up with these two kings. And it says here in verse number 10, "Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor, and their armies with them, about 15,000 men, all who were left of the entire army of the sons of the east, for the fallen were 120,000 swordsmen. Gideon went up by the way of those who lived in tents on the east of Nobab, and Jogheba, and attacked the camp when the camp was unsuspecting. When Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued them and captured the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and routed the whole army." Gideon had learned that these two Midianite kings were in Karkor. Karkor means a safe enclosure. In other words, you have to remember, were they in the place of Karkor, or were they in the place that Gideon is going to call Karkor? Well, he uses the word Karkor because it means they think they're in a safe enclosure place. It sat not far from Succoth and from Peniel. Now, it was in the desert wastelands on the east side of the Jordan River. Remember, you're headed towards those sands of what is today called Iraq. The east side of what the country we call Jordan, and then Jordan butts up next to Iraq on its east side. So we're talking about these sands. So it's in that desert wasteland there on the east side of the Jordan River. And we do not know exactly where Karkor sits today because it's the name that the Hebrews gave this location in memory of the event that took place there, or I should say that's about to take place, or what has taken place there. It was not a village or a town at the time. The two kings had hidden in this enclosed area where they think they're safe with 15,000 men, all of those who were left from the entire army of the sons of the east. For Gideon and his 300 men, 15,000 men presented a formidable force to face. It was the third in the battles with the Midianites in these 2 or 3 day period here. We also learn in this passage that the two kings had already lost 120,000 men in the previous two battles with Israel. Gideon, with his original 300 men and the addition of the men of Ephraim, had struck quite a blow to these Midianites, killing more than 82% of the Midianite troops. Now, to get to Karkor, Gideon and his men took a path by the tents of Nobah and Jobeha. Nobah was of the tribe of Manasseh. He was granted land in the area called Gilead on the east side of the Jordan River, and we found that out over in Numbers chapter 32, verse 42. Jogbeha was a tent town built on the border of the tribe of Gad and Manasseh, right on the border, on the east side of the Jordan River. We found that out over in Numbers chapter 32, verse 35. Same chapter in Numbers 32 for both of these towns. The mention of these two names means that Gideon was almost directly east of the Valley of Jezreel, straight across on his way to Karkor in that desert sands. Now, when Gideon arrived in Karkor, the text says he attacked the camp when the camp was unsuspecting. Because Gideon named the place Karkor, it is probably safe to say that the location was some sort of enclosed area, such as a sheepfold or perhaps a secluded area between two mountains on the edge of this desert sands. And doesn't matter, as Gideon arrives, the two kings ran again. But Gideon caught up with them, capturing them, killing all 15,000 men with them with just 300 of his own soldiers. Not one of those 15,000 was saved. Then the men of the Midianite kings were dead. The kings were in hand. Time had come. Time had come from Gideon to go back to Succoth and to back to Peniel to discipline his relatives, and we find that in verse number 13. Then Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from the battle by the ascent of Aris, and he captured a youth from Succoth and questioned him. Then the youth wrote down for him the princes of Succoth and its elders, 77 men. He came to the men of Succoth and said, "Behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, concerning whom you taunted me, saying, 'Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand, that we should give bread to your men who are weary?' He took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and disciplined the men of Succoth with them. He tore down the tower of Peniel and killed the men of the city." First of all, let's ask this question. It says he went by the ascent of Aris. Now you should understand this. Aris is mistranslated in our English. The word Aris should have been translated the sun. The ascent of Aris is the ascent of the sun, or the rising of the sun, or the sunrise. That's the way it should have been said. Gideon had attacked the two kings and their armies at night. With the army dead and the kings in hand, Gideon returned to Succoth. In Succoth, with the Midianite kings in hand, Gideon captured a youth. He questioned that youth. He asked for the names of the rulers of Succoth and the names of the elders, and the man told him and wrote them down. The young youth wrote them down. 77 elders in all, men in all. And in Succoth, Gideon went with the intent of disciplining those who would not give aid to his men when they were hungry. In tow, Gideon had Zeba, and he had Zalmunna. He repeated what they had said to him when they sent him off without food. Then he disciplined them with thorns and briars. What does that mean? Did he kill them? We do not know. Here is what we do know. In the villages of Succoth and Peniel, the people had not made a good decision. In fact, the leaders had not made a good decision, but we do know this. The people were not in control. The decisions were always made by the elders. It's one of the bad things about having an elder system, even in a church or anything today, we have elders, because then all the decisions are made by the elders, and the people don't get any say within sight of it. Therefore, Gideon would have been out of line to discipline the entire town because they didn't have a choice. Now, in Gideon's case, he would only discipline those who made the decisions. In this case, it was the elders. The Hebrew word translated discipline in verse number 16 here means to teach. It doesn't exactly mean to punish, But in the context of this, because it has the talking about the punishment with the thorns and the briars, Gideon taught the elders a lesson with the use of the thorns and the briars. Now the Targum tells us, the Jewish Targum tells us, that Gideon broke the thorns and briars upon the 77 men in what he called scourging. That's what the Targum tells us. He scourged them. Their flesh was torn by the thorns and the briars. But did it lead to their death? Maybe some of them it did, but we do not know. After dealing with Succoth, we see Gideon moving on over to Peniel. There the outcome was different. There the famed Tower of Peniel was torn down and the elders killed. The writer did not tell us what the men of Peniel said to Gideon in the first place. Whatever it was, must have been worse than what the men of Succoth had said, for Gideon's response was different to them. He killed them. Succoth was taught a lesson. Peniel was delivered a death punishment. Now after dragging Zeba and Zalmunna through Succoth and Peniel, Gideon turned his attention to these two kings. Gideon killed these kings, but he questioned them first. Verse number 18. Then he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, "What kind of men were they whom you killed at Tabor?" And they said, "They were like you, each one resembling the son of a king." He said, this is Gideon speaking, "They were my brothers, the sons of my mother. And as the Lord lives, if only you had let them live, I would not kill you." So he said to Jether, his firstborn, "Rise, kill them." But the youth did not draw his sword, for he was afraid, because he was still a youth. Then Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Rise up yourself and fall on us, for as the man, so is his strength." So Gideon arose and killed Zeba and Zalmunna and took the crescent ornaments which were on their camels' necks. Here we have the only entry in the Bible dealing with Zeba and Zalmunna killing the brothers of Gideon at Tabor. Mount Tabor stood in the land of Zebulun on the border of Issachar. It was on Mount Tabor that Deborah and Barak took their first stand to lure Sisera away from his home base to defeat him in cycle number 4. That has been more than 47 years since this point in the scripture. In addition, the Midianites were not allies of Sisera and did not participate in that battle. Furthermore, Deborah and Barak won that battle. How could Gideon's brothers be old enough or be that old and part of that battle? Surely even if they had been young soldiers in the battle, they would have not been killed by these two kings because these Midianites were not involved with that battle. Therefore, these two kings must have killed Gideon's brothers sometime in the last 7 years of their oppression, and they must have done it there at Tabor. But the details we do not know. So we see the entry of Jether here now in the story. Gideon's firstborn son, who was still a youth, it says. This is important because it gives us an idea of how old Gideon was when the Lord selected him to be the deliverer of Israel. Gideon was just a young man also. With a firstborn son still in his youth, Gideon was probably near 35 years of age at the time, maybe a little older, maybe a little younger. Of course, we see that Jether did not have the inward strength to kill the two kings. And that is understandable. He was just a youth, probably 13, maybe 10, maybe 11, maybe 13. We don't know. Gideon had to do the job because Jether couldn't. That's understandable too. Nevertheless, over the next 40 years of Gideon's life, he will sire and have 70 sons in all with many wives and one son with a concubine. We will address this again when we reach verse number 30 in this chapter. But for now, we can give you a short little introduction. To have many wives in Israel was not honorable. It was not honorable. The law in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 17 says to the men, "He shall not multiply wives for himself, or else his heart will turn away." Gideon will do it anyway. Gideon will retire after his conquest that we're talking about now to his home in the tribe of Manasseh. He will not be the king of Israel, but he will act like he is the king and evidently not be challenged by the religious leaders when he takes these multiple wives, because he is symbolically the king of Israel and cannot be questioned. After all, he is the chosen of the Lord, and his victories proved it. Polygamy was a sin. Nevertheless, the rulers of Israel adopted it anyway, as we will see in Judges chapter 10, verse 4, Judges chapter 12, which is where we are now, Judges chapter 12, verse 9. Of course, we will see it with the king, such as King Saul. We'll see multiple wives with King David. We'll see multiple wives with Solomon. It is still a sin. Now, moving on in this passage, Gideon took the crescent ornaments which were on their camels' necks. The Hebrew word for ornaments actually means little moons, and that's the way it should have been translated. Gideon took these little metal moons that were hanging and dangling around the camels' necks. The Hebrew word actually, besides meaning little moons, it means moon god. These were little symbols for their moon god. These crescent-shaped adornments were made of gold or they were made of silver. They are still commonly used today to decorate animals and cultures that worship the moon gods, such as the Arabs, the Muslims, the Islams, I should say, because they worship Allah, who is the moon god. They are mentioned in Isaiah chapter 3, verse 18, in the same context as this, a thought, but for female male attire as well as animals. In other words, the women wore these moon gods around their necks too. Gideon took these from the camels. We do not know what Gideon did with the camels of the two kings. Gideon had started well and followed the Lord completely. However, after this campaign, things were not so good with Gideon's leadership. We come to Gideon's collapse in verse number 22. "Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, both you and your sons, also your sons' sons, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian.' But Gideon said to them, 'I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you.' Yet Gideon said to them, 'I would request of you that each of you give me an earring from his spoil.' And they said, 'We will surely give them.' So they spread out a garment, and every one of them threw an earring there from his spoil. The weight of gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescent ornaments and the pendants and the purple robes which were on the kings of Midian, and besides the neck bands that were on their camels' necks. Gideon made it into an ephah and placed it in his city, Ophrah. And all Israel played the harlot with it there, so that it became a snare to Gideon and his household." The request that Gideon become the ruler of Israel did not come from the 300 men army. It came from all the men of Israel. Gideon had saved Israel from the oppression. As ruler, it would be his duty to continue to protect Israel in the future. But Gideon rightly declined. He did not want to be the king. He wanted the Lord to be the king. He knew he got that part right. He also declined to allow his son, Jether, to one day be the king in his place, or the ruler in his place. And he declined to allow any of his grandchildren to be rulers in the future. Gideon did all of that right. We might say that Gideon had it well within his right to ask for a financial gift from Israel when he led the campaign, because he led the campaign. But with that gift came Gideon's collapse. As Israel's deliverer, he did something very wrong. He took those gifts and he made an ephod with some of those gifts he was given. And that item became a source of idolatry. You see, the high priest ephod was described back in the book of Exodus, so we know what this ephod was. Exodus says this: "They shall also make an ephod of gold, of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of the skillful workman. It shall have two shoulder pieces joined to its two ends, that it may be joined. The skillfully woven band which is on it shall be like its workmanship, of the same material, of gold and of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. You shall take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel, six of their names on one stone, and the names of the remaining six on the other stone, according to their birth. As a jeweler engraves a signet, you shall engrave the two stones according to the names of the sons of Israel. You shall set them in filigree settings of gold. You shall put the two stones on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as stones of memorial for the sons of Israel, and Aaron shall bear their names before the Lord on his two shoulders for a memorial. You shall make filigree settings of gold and two chains of pure gold, and you shall make them of twisted cartage work, and you shall put the corded chains on the filigree settings." This passage that we have just read from Exodus is part of the high priest's dress that he wears when he goes before the Lord. It is not something to be worshipped, though. And looking at the gifts that the men gave Gideon, he had all that he needed to construct a similar ephod for himself. Concerning this ephod, the text says, "And placed it in the city of Ophrah, and all Israel played the harlot with it there, so that it became a snare to Gideon and to his household." Gideon's ephod became a garment that was worshipped by the people of the nation of Israel. Worshipping a garment instead of the Lord is idolatry, and it breaks the Lord's covenant, and it breaks the Lord's commandment. But the garment was also a snare to Gideon and his household. Like a snare, it leads to destruction for both Gideon and his family. Why? Because of the pride and the arrogancy of how the people worship that ephod. Finally, the writer brings us to Gideon's death, his casualty, in verse number 28. "So Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their heads anymore. And the land was undisturbed for 40 years in the days of Gideon." So all was fine. Midian was defeated by Gideon. Midian had suffered a great casualty at the hand of Gideon. Israel, even playing the harlot with Gideon's ephod, was simply undisturbed for 40 years while Gideon was still alive. But Israel was not sinless by any means. The writer then interjects the introduction of Abimelech at this time. Gideon's son, born to Gideon's only concubine, in verse number 29. "Then Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and lived in his own house. Now Gideon had 70 sons who were his direct descendants, for he had many wives. His concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, and he named him Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a ripe old age and was buried in the tomb of his father Joash in Ophrah of the Abiezrites." Gideon lived in Ophrah. But in this passage, we learn that he had a concubine that lived over in Shechem. His son by this concubine was named Abimelech, which means my father the king, or my father is king. We would normally miss this point because as English-speaking people, we rarely grasp the meanings of the word pictures that are behind these words, these Hebrew words. Gideon lived in Ophrah. He was not the king of Israel. But this passage, with this passage, it seems clear that the rest of the nation Israel thought of Gideon as their king. And the writer told us here in verse 23 that Gideon turned down the offer to be king, but Gideon had not stopped the thought from being in the people's minds. Furthermore, as the son of Gideon's concubine living in Shechem rather than in Ophrah, the son's name told us that the people of Israel, what they thought about him, that he was the son of the king, Gideon. And that is what the Hebrew name means here. And because he is not Gideon's firstborn, who was still a youth at the time of Gideon's victory, it can be assumed rightly that Abimelech was born years after the campaign of Gideon. The campaign, and Gideon was living back in Ophrah, and Abimelech's been born during these 40 years. However, Gideon came to have a concubine. How did he have a concubine in Shechem? We do not know, but he did. And Abimelech was the offspring of that. We're not through with Abimelech. We've got much more. But that'll have to wait until our next time together, enjoying God's Word.